The bell may have been confusing, I guess it was wrong a little early. So we'll let the tape person begin. My name is Kathy Finley, and I'm really happy to be here. This is the, well, actually, the third time I've been at Holden. The first time was 1970, and second time about 3 years ago. I teach in the Religious Studies Department at Gonzaga, at Gonzaga University in Spokane. But I have a long interest and fascination with how do we understand our experience in light of our relationship with God. And so I entitled this series here at Holden, God of My Days and Nights, an experiential look at spirituality. And what I want to do is begin diving into that process, knowing that it's very possible that some of you won't be able to join other parts of this conversation. But I'd like to begin by just commenting on how well this fits into the theme for the summer at Holden of listening to the sacred. And the faculty were given a sheet of kind of, you know, a way to set that tone, and I was just really struck by the first paragraph of this piece about the theme written by the director, Scott Hastert. So I'd just like to share it with you. Everyone longs to tell her or his story to someone and have it understood and accepted. Most of us can recognize that desire in our own hearts. Human beings are one of the sacred, fragile, and mysterious creations of God, and there is probably no service we can render to one another that is more important than to be a listener to one another when they need to open their hearts and tell their story. It is this kind of conversation that we hope for at Holden. It is conversation that begins with a covenant that we do not have to agree, but we commit ourselves to listen deeply and attentively to one another and to try to walk in their shoes so that we can understand. It is conversation that continues with the knowledge we will be listened to deeply and attentively, and the other person or persons will try and walk in our shoes. Through this process of conversation, it is our hope that in the end a fuller truth will emerge, and there will be no winners or losers, but only God's people with a fuller experience of one another and the issues that shape our lives. Well, as you well know, looking at the kiosk out there, there's a lot of different issues that we have an opportunity to look at this week, even just this week alone. But what I specifically want to ask us to do today, and if you join me for the other sessions this week, is to look at us, at ourselves. So the nice thing is, though I'm going to be kind of facilitating the session, welcome, you're the expert here, because you're the expert on you. There's more chairs over here if you want to grab it. And so what we want to do, as I look around the room, a few people with a few gray hairs like my own, we've got a lot of experience in this room. So what we want to do is really tap that and see what we've got here. But before we do that, I'd like to just look at a couple questions, such as, what is spirituality? And why are we looking at it from an experiential point of view? Because I think this kind of helps give us a reason for what we're about to bring. Spirituality is something that I'd like to differentiate from faith and from theology. There are probably some other words we could use in here too. What I mean by spirituality today and in our sessions is how we live, and the operative word is how we live, also an operative word, our faith. Faith being what we believe, another operative word. And finally, theology being thinking about the Christian tradition, if it's Christian theology. Now, I didn't bring the word Christian into, not Christian theology, Christian tradition. I didn't bring the word Christian into the other two words, but I certainly could have done that. Christian spirituality is how we live the Christian tradition. Buddhist spirituality would be how we live a Buddhist tradition, and so on. Faith is what we believe about the Christian tradition, so that if we look at these three elements, for each of us, they would be unique. Your faith is different than my faith. If we wrote a personal creed, each of ours would be unique. Your theology is probably unique to you as well. Now, that comes out of each of these do, not only the Christian tradition, but in many cases for us, it comes out of a particular denomination within the Christian tradition. My background is Catholic, and you may see that pop out at various points. I know many of you, though probably not all, are Lutheran. And that's going to have a shaping influence on all three of these, but each of us has very much a unique way of being Christ in the world. That's what we are called to be. And Peter wasn't called to be John, and Luke wasn't called to be Matthew, and so on and so forth. And thank goodness, I think, that we have four different ways of looking at this person of Jesus in our Gospels to help us see at least four different facets of who this person was and how he lived the message. You know, somebody can take this chair because I'm going to probably be sitting down a lot.
Thank you.
So we can differentiate, it seems to me, spirituality, faith, and theology. Now, do these interrelate? Yes, I think so. The spirituality, the way I live, is very much connected to what I believe. At least hopefully it is what I say I believe. And the theology that is a part of how I see myself as a Christian and how my how the tradition has formed me is going to at times be a real place of critique is a word that comes to mind, but that's not completely what I mean. My theology and the theology of my tradition will help me see, is my spirituality all that it needs to be? If, as a Christian, for example, I am very focused only, and this may sound a little contradictory to what I'm going to be talking about today, but it isn't really. If I'm only focused on me, myself, and I, and my relationship to God only, and I don't have any element of community or service, the Christian theological tradition says, no, that's not what a Christian is about. No one of us is a Christian in isolation, which is what I'm going to be talking about a lot tomorrow, about the dimensions of solitude and community in our spirituality. But my point is that these do interrelate, and that our theology as well as our faith have a real impact on how we live our faith tradition. Comments or questions on that? Does that make sense as a way to differentiate those? Question, does everyone have a spirituality? I mean, now I'm talking not just Christians.
Yeah, because they all live somehow.
Okay. Okay. Anybody else?
Even all primitive peoples had God. Mm-hmm.
And some of the peoples that we see as, quote, primitive may have had a deeper and richer spirituality than us civilized, cultured, progressive peoples. Okay, I'm gonna pick on I'm the oldest of five children. I have a brother a year younger than myself, and him and I aren't very close, but he gets used a lot as an example. He's a very, what I see to be, and I shouldn't be judging him, I know that's not very Christian, seems to me to be a very selfish, very, at times, rather ruthless, very successful individual. And I remember, as we were growing up, his motto was, do unto others before others do unto you. I kid you not. Does this person have a spirituality?
Yeah,
of sorts.
Really got a spirit.
Yeah, he's got it. That's right. Okay, I just wanted to push it. One other thing I'd want to say about spirituality, we use another color here, is that when we talk about how we live, I would like to almost, haven't quite had the courage or whatever to completely make it equal to, but almost equal to a very contemporary word, that of lifestyle.
It seems to me that there are a lot of ways in which, if I really want to look at your spirituality, I look at how you live, at your lifestyle, all the elements of that. Not what you say you believe and value and so on, but how you really live it out. One example that I like to give when I teach about this at Gonzaga is, no one's at your house probably, but if you had someone house-sitting for you, what would that person see and experience about you and your lifestyle and what you really value by being in the setting where you live most of your life? Are there a lot of pictures of people up? You know, our refrigerators say a lot about it. Maybe yours is clean, mine's not. I've got a lot of things magneted to my refrigerator and a couple of other bulletin boards in our kitchen. And it's kind of cluttered. One has all kinds of announcements about schools and organizations, but another one has pictures of a lot of people that are real important in our lives. You know, maybe it's a very clean, neat, you know, everything in its place. I wish mine were a time. But anyway, those kinds of things can say a lot about what's important to you. Maybe neat isn't all that important. What's important is comfortable and people and so on and so forth. And if I sound judgmental, I don't intend to be. I think it's important to say, this is who I am, and this is how I am God's gift to the world. And it's going to be different and unique for each of us, and that's the way it should be. Okay, one other thing I want to say about spirituality before we move on, and that is that we've got the word spirit here, and I think it's real important. This is a personal bias on my part, and an assumption that I will be making, that it's not spirit versus flesh, soul versus the body. The reason I say that is that I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to put a circle around it and line through it, okay? Because I'm convinced that as people of Western culture, we're still trying to dig our way out of an immense hole called dualism. And that dualism pops its head up when we think we've become enlightened, and this is no longer a problem for us. But this has its roots not in the Christian tradition, nor in the Hebrew tradition, but in Greek philosophy, Neoplatonic thought. And somehow we still, deep in our bones, I think, have a definite conviction that what's important is not this container, but what's inside. And so, you know, thank goodness we have places of healing like a Holden that help us begin to try and put ourselves back together in the way that I think when we read Genesis is loud and clear that that's who we are, that we're good, not just some parts of us better than others, but we are very good. Read it, it's there in, you know, black and white. And so it seems to me that spirituality sometimes still for us can have too many connotations of, I'm dealing with the spirit, not this body here. And that's part of why I mentioned the lifestyle, because I think it's all related. And we're trying to put that back together, you know, our emphasis on fitness and so on and so forth. We're trying to really understand holistic health. What we do, though, at times, is go at that in a way that is still too dualistic, I think, that we can tend to want to make a good container because then it'll be attractive and so on and so forth, rather than really looking at how that really helps heal the whole person. So it seems to me, and I don't know if you agree, disagree, or would want to comment on that, that this is still something that kind of rears its head back there when we hear a word like spirituality.
Well, I think there's many, many people there only working with the body and forget the soul totally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's true, too. And that's, to me, not a completely separate issue. I mean, I think it's another way in which this rears its head.
I think it depends on how much emphasis you put on your body versus your spirit, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're concerned with personal appearances, how you appear to people, and that in effect reflects your lifestyle too to some extent. It's what you want people, how you want them to think about you. And it may not be of the spirit as such, it might be egotistical. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to keep things in balance.
Yes.
I think it's important to keep the body as healthy and as well as you can, but you also have to work with the mind and the spirit as well.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
That's that holistic concept.
Yeah, it really is. And
I think what really matters is your relationship with God and how you want to live in terms of, are you serving God or are you serving yourself? But you have to also consider you're serving others. And that's the kind of a relationship you need with God, because you have to reach out to other people. You can't be unto yourself.
Right, and we live in such a culture that puts increasing emphasis. I mean, with three teenage and pre-teenage boys, I'm very aware of this. I mean, it's no longer girls that are only concerned with their appearances, you know. There are so many messages heading at them as far as, you know, how you look is so important. And I mean, they're headed at all of us, but I guess...
Well, look at television, for example. You know, what television conveys to people. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's all materialistic, basically.
That's right.
There's a little spirituality in there.
And it's tough, then, to really emphasize a holistic spirituality in light of all that. Okay, I want to move on because our time is limited, and I've got some books out here that please help me remember as our hour draws to a close that I want to mention some of these to you. What I'd like to ask us to do with a lot of the time for the rest of our hour together is to listen to our lives and to our experience. And I don't know how many are familiar with Frederick Buechner's works, but he's a lovely author that puts things so well. And this is a book of daily readings of his that has been a real prize for me this year. And his first reading is one that I had found, and part of it I had made up in calligraphy for my husband. He says, I discovered that if you really keep your eye peeled to it and your ears open, if you really pay attention to it, even such a limited and limiting life as the one I was living on Rupert Mountain opened up onto extraordinary vistas. This is at a particular point in his life, obviously. Taking your children to school and kissing your wife goodbye, eating lunch with a friend, trying to do a decent day's work, hearing the rain patter against the window. There is no event so commonplace but that God is present within it, always hiddenly. Always leaving you room to recognize God or not recognize God, but all the more fascinating because of that, all the more compellingly and hauntingly. If I were called upon to state in a few words the essence of everything I was trying to say, both as a novelist and as a preacher, it would be something like this. This is the part that led it up for me. Listen to your life. See it for the fathomless mystery that it is, in the boredom and pain of it, no less than in the excitement and gladness. Touch, taste, smell your way to the holy and hidden heart of it, because in the last analysis, all moments are key moments, and life itself is grace. Anyway, that's what we want to try and touch to a bit, is to really appreciate ourselves and the life that God has led us into and continues to lead us into, because when we talk about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, we talk also about the fact that, you know, fill in the blank for yourself, whether it's key people in your life, key places in your life, the God of blank, blank, blank. Those elements that have made your life unique from anyone else in this room, anyone else in the world, are the ways in which God has spoken to you, has been a part of that journey that has been with you. And I don't know about you, but I have found that I need times, opportunities to step aside and kind of take a look at that and size that up. And so that's what I hope today gives you the opportunity for, and I sure hope I have enough of these. Let's try and see if I've got enough of these. I do some quilting, as I was talking before class, and so this has a quilt design on. Let's see. We'll stretch these out as far as we can. What I'd like you to do before you start in on the quilt side is on the reverse of that, or another sheet that you brought, I'm going to put you to work, and I'm going to ask you to write down 20 or more, 20 words or phrases that describe you. And it may be best not to do a whole lot of thinking about it. Okay, so it could be a word like joyful. It could be a phrase like lover of nature. Okay? 20 words or phrases that describe you.
Do we just got enough?
Okay.
And then I'll put your work written in that.
I just don't have any time.
Oh, you need writing things.
I've got a couple of things. I don't have any of these things.
If you need to borrow a book to write on, too. Okay, if I could ask two faculty here, anybody else need a pen and pencil?
Twenty words or phrases that describe you.
And if you want to go past 20, feel free.
Okay.
When you finish that, try to come up with at least 20.
Oh dear.
Good gosh.
Well, it takes you beyond the obvious ones, maybe. Sometimes it's helpful to, you know, step aside and be somebody else and say, what would they think or say about me? What do other people reflect on me? Are there any of those quilt square sheets left?
Yes. Oh,
good. Good. Better. Everybody got one, huh? Great.
Tom, do you have 20 words or phrases that describe you?
And then, if anybody's finished with that list, six values, which might be related to your other list. I have virtues here because that's the more classical spirituality word, or qualities that describe you, such as openness, truthful, that sort of thing. That may be part of that other list, but specifically, what are some qualities that are important to you? And they may not be part of the other list. Remember, I said you're the expert here. You know you. One more card here. And, no, it's just related to the values and virtues, how I live those. For example, if I'm a truthful person, what's a way in which I do that? If you can think of something and write those down, you don't have to. Was harder work than you thought you were going to.
Oh, I'm sorry.
She's lived a long year.
I know.
You better at least get into your list pretty fast.
I used to know I'm better than that, but I can't.
I do.
Oh, okay. I'm somebody else.
That's right.
And I can't feel yours off.
What are you?
The ones that are credible.
Well, maybe it'll help once we start talking about it.
Jack, my number.
Can we add the list after we talk?
Yes.
Any more?
one point.
You're blank.
You don't have to be all be good, do you?
No.
No.
Well, we'll talk about it.
Sense of humor, neatness.
What were these other things here? What were these other things here? Oh, describe us?
Words or phrases that describe you. You know, there might be roles there, like parent, wife, you know, roles. There might be. These are different ways to look at the same thing. How many people need more time?
The rest of my life.
Maybe if it's here.
Well, what I have in mind to do is to ask you to hear about these in twos in a little while. And my thought is, if you do come back for other sessions, and the other person is here to pair up with the same person, so you can do that. But you can share only what you're comfortable sharing with the other person today. We'll do that in a few minutes.
The six values or virtues or qualities are we pick out from this list, or
what you like to do?
I got 10. Could you read them the lights say out there?
Pardon? Oh, I just have six values or virtues or qualities that describe you and how you live those.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So it's a little different.
And how you live
them. And how you live them. Like, sometimes those can be pretty abstract, and to remind yourself, well, I have a strong sense of responsibility, and that shows up in how I follow through with the things I say I'm going to do for others. Or service is an important value to me, and I do that by the volunteer work that I do, or that sort of thing. You may know what you mean by that, you don't need to do that, but sometimes it's hard for us to clarify, okay, what do we mean by this value of mine? Is it just something I say, or do I really live it? Is it really part of my spirituality, as we talked earlier?
I'm a good target, everybody! See, they don't throw it at.
Well, now that I've got you thoroughly confused.
Yeah,
you sure
have.
I'd like to talk a little bit about self and self-esteem and about values, and then have us do this dialogue in twos. And it'll be a pretty short dialogue, but I think it may help you to talk about what you've written. In Luke chapter 10, the story of the Good Samaritan, remember how that one begins? There's a lawyer who's going to trip Jesus up and get him to really pin him down in a way that he wants to show up this so-called teacher. He calls him teacher. He says, "What must I do to inherit everlasting life?" Jesus answers, "What is written in the law? Good rabbi, how do you read it?" He replied, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your strength, and with your mind." And this comes out of, Leviticus. "And your neighbor as yourself." And that's the part we want to look at. As yourself. Not before yourself, not after yourself, but as yourself. That the one process is very much related to the other. To the degree to which I am loving myself, accepting myself, really appreciating myself, there are energies freed from within me to really be able to go out to others. And, you know, we live in an era and a world that is increasingly impacted by the psychological sciences. And it's easy for us to get kind of over, the word balance up here, get over psychological sciences. But it seems to me that we do need to really listen to what Jesus is telling us here, is that it isn't necessarily something we can take for granted, especially in culture, as we said earlier, that gives us all kinds of negative information. You're too fat, you smell bad, your hair doesn't look right, and so on and so forth. And there are a lot of those messages around, because therefore you need this deodorant, this shampoo, this
you know, and so on and so forth. So that's going to be our basis for looking at some of these elements of letting it begin with me in terms of my experience. The business of self-esteem we hear about and talk about a lot seems to me that what we need to be increasingly aware of is a number of phrases that I want to talk about. That I am good as I am, that I am very good, as Genesis points out. As my friend used to say when we were in high school, God cared enough to send the very best, me. It seems to me that we do need to remind ourselves of that and be pretty conscious about that in the midst of a pretty depersonalized society. I want to talk a little bit later about how do I reconcile this with Jesus' reminder to forget self and deny self and take up your cross and so on, so don't let me forget that. I am also gift. I am, God loves me, respects me, and has patience with me, forgives me more than I do myself. That's the basis for my faith in a God that Jesus announces, that really I continue to try and discover this love that that I didn't earn, but that I definitely can rejoice in and should. And I've been given many talents. Those are talents not to be kept to myself, but to be shared, which I'm going to spend the session on Friday talking about more. I'm filled to overflowing with God's love, as open as I'll let myself be. The limitations are not on God's part, the limitations are on my part. I am not perfect, however, and certainly most of us are all too aware of the ways in which we're an imperfect vessel for this love that God gives us. Do I put the emphasis, though, on the sinfulness or on the savedness, okay, to use the traditional terminology? It seems to me, this is an article I pulled out a while back in Christianity Today, am I supposed to love myself or hate myself? What do we do? And it's not an easy question in the midst of a very psychological age. What we are, this author mentions, our self or personal identity is partly the result of being created in God's image and partly the result of the fall, the image defaced. The self we are to deny, disown, and crucify is our fallen self, everything within us that is incompatible with Jesus. Hence Christ's command, let him deny himself and follow me. The self we are to affirm and value is our created self, everything within us that is compatible with Jesus. Hence the statement that if we lose ourselves by self-denial, we will find ourselves. True self-denial, the denial of our false, fallen self, is not the road to self-destruction, but the road to self-discovery. So there are elements within me that I do need to take a good look at and say, that doesn't really lead me closer to Jesus. That doesn't really lead me in the direction of full wholeness. And in my experience, I don't always know those for myself. I need others' advice and direction to really discover those in my life. But I do need, so I need to deny myself those things that really aren't fully me, the best me that God has created. I am worth spending time with. That means that I don't settle for less than I deserve, it seems to me. I can expect respect from others, and I shouldn't judge my own value by how others treat me, positively or negatively. And I need to take time for myself, for spending time with myself, which will be different for, you know, the extroverts and introverts in us. But to really know myself and appreciate myself so that I have more of me to give to others. And that's an important balance that we each have to find for ourselves. And as I said earlier, every part of myself, every aspect of me is good. My body, my soul, my mind, my conscience, my feelings, all of my feelings. You know, when I am just hopping mad at my kids, which never happens, of course, you know, there's a signal going on. There's something, you know, button that's been pushed, and there's important information there. And if I push that away because it's not nice to be, you know, angry and so on, I've denied some important information that I need to listen to and I need to hear. My vocation and relationship and faith with God, which is a unique element, my sexuality, every part of me is good. And I am not, this is important for us to remind ourselves of, in the society in which we live, what I do or what I have. We're told that constantly. I am not what I do or what I have. It's easy to look in one or both of those directions if I can't really realize my own goodness. I'll make myself good, by darn. I'll find lots to have or lots to do, and then I don't listen to the noise that's inside. Excuse me. And I also do not have to play games. To play games such as putting up masks, plenty of them around to put up, settling for less, envy and jealousy, if only I were so-and-so, if only I had what he or she had. And gosh, I found myself doing some of that today. I forget, I was just sitting on the porch and I was watching people go by and really appreciating what the relationship this one person had with a child and somebody else for, you know, and I thought, gosh, you know, I know better than that, but we do it all the time, at least I experience myself. A need for power is another game that we don't need to play. We don't need to impress, as we were saying earlier, with books, expertise, and so on. We don't need to play the game of depression or victim. Oh, it's so terrible and so awful. Now, I don't know if any of you had an opportunity to hear the presentation this morning on the Enneagram. This and a number of places are good examples of how that really fits in, because those 9 Enneagram types kind of help us name for ourselves what some of those games that we might be more tending toward are than others. We don't have to live through others or hang too tight. We don't have to escape ourselves through alcohol or other drugs, workaholism, and so on. We don't have to blame others for the way my life is, because I take responsibility, because I know that these things are true about me. And yes, it's not all everybody else's fault. I'm not perfect either. But that's all a part of, it seems to me, really appreciating myself. And then because of all of this, I can give others the safety of trust, of not judging them, of cherishing them, because I don't need to worry about, are they accepting me? I can have an energy free to be there for others. Of owning my feelings. You don't make me mad. I feel angry. You know, and we know all that. I feel like a lot of this is probably reminding you of things you already know, but I think it's good every once in a while to remind ourselves. I can give others the freedom of empathy, of really being able to feel with them and not always worrying about my feelings, because then I can really have some energies free to be with them. And of allowing them to uniquely grow and be who they are and not having to do it on my terms. So it seems to me in any relationship I either nurture and create the other person, or I fail to. And those can be momentary. You know, I don't know if you've had that experience of a clerk in a store, or a waitress or waiter in a restaurant, and somehow there's some really good energy that happens in that situation. When I really appreciate who I am, that energy is free to be there for others, and it doesn't have to be stuck in me and worrying all the time about what's happening within me. Well, I'm going to put you to work again if you flip the sheet over to the quilt side. You'll see an inner kind of diamond. And the main part that I would like you to fill out tonight is within the diamond. All of the white squares in the middle and the 4 corners, if you could put within each of those something that you like about yourself. Now, you've already done 20 things, so it probably could be from that list. Things that you like about yourself. You'll notice 8 darker squares, and there isn't a possibility of writing on those. But another important thing, but do the white ones first, please, is to put a line from each of the black ones out here and put something that I don't like about myself, okay? Because we are not perfect, okay? So things that you like about yourself in the star and each of the four diamond corners, and then afterward, eight things that you don't like about yourself. Just put a line, as I have, sort of, out to the perimeter and note what that might be. This you won't be sharing with anybody. Now don't do the black ones first, please. I sense that you probably haven't had as much time as I would have liked you to have on this exercise, but one more thing before I ask you to share this with another for a bit, and that is, I mentioned these values and then I didn't pick back up on that. What the main thing I wanted to point to there is what people who study the process of valuing things tell us is that a value is something that I prize, that I affirm publicly, that I choose freely from other options, and that I'm willing to consistently choose over time. So if it's a value to me for safety but I never buckle my seatbelt, then is it really a value to me? Is service really a value to me but I never really get around to doing the volunteer things that I think I really can and should be doing? Those are a couple examples. What I'd like you to think about, and again, this may or may not be something you'd like to share with the other person, is that the values you have down, you may find, and it may be related to the black and white squares on the quilt, which, if you look at it, without those squares that are the things that I don't like about myself, you wouldn't have much of a defined design. Without those contrasts, there would just be, you know, this kind of random sense of lines. So those things that I get frustrated with myself regularly about are part of that me that I'm at, that God asks me to love. And they may very well find that some of those values are the reverse side of that me that I find hard to like. So that, true confessions time here, I'm a dandy perfectionist, okay? And I really like things done really well. Well, that drives me and my kids nuts on a regular basis, but I'm a good detail person, and I follow things through and so on. Or honesty can end up being a fault when someone is too blunt with others or can't keep confidence as well or whatever it is, not that those are necessarily. Yeah. Can anybody think of any other examples of where something that on the one hand is a value and a good can also have a what we call a shadow side to it in terms of the
when a person is loving to the extent that they are unloving to others to the extent that they're unloving to themselves.
Unfortunately, what often drives me crazy in somebody else is exactly what I have a hard time loving in myself, don't you find?
Yeah, that you can't accept in yourself.
Exactly, that you can't accept in yourself, so when I see it out there, it's safer to get frustrated or mad at it out there. Well, what I would like you to do, I'm going to leave these books up here. Two or three of these are in the bookstore, Pray Always, which talks about different ways. What I've done is try to find a few books here that are about prayer and spirituality and daily life. There's another one that I don't have a copy of here that I know is in the bookstore on parenting, because I find that a real important way for me of spiritual growth. It's called Parenting as a Spiritual Discipline. But I'd encourage you to look these over if you get a chance. What I'd like you to share with another person about for the next few minutes, and then we can turn off the tape person, is what I've learned about myself or what I need to listen to more in myself is. So it may be something that's on your sheets, it may not be. But I'd encourage you to share as much as you're comfortable with one other person in the group now, but to do that in a way that you're, going to keep that to yourself. That's a confidence that's being shared with you and not to be shared with anyone else. Okay, so it may be the person sitting next to you, but ask someone else if they would, it helps when you can say that aloud to someone else. And what I learned about myself, or what I need to listen to more in myself. Is there a song about you?